I'm glad you're joining me for another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. We are in the book of Genesis, chapter number 10. We've been looking at what has been traditionally referred to as the Table of Nations. This is a list of the three basic people groups that come from the three families starting fresh after the flood: Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And these base people groups spread out into subgroups that give their names to ethnicities and areas within a few generations after the flood. And the reason why that gets kind of solidified is because of the Tower of Babel incident that we're going to talk about today in just a little bit. So this is what we know so far. We know that the Japhethites, they have some connection in the upper Middle East, but they spread from there northward, westward, northwestward, and for all practical purposes, the Japhethites become what we refer to as Europeans. So I would consider myself to be a Japhethite. The family of Ham also started in Mesopotamia, because that's where the Tower of Babel incident takes place. But the Hamites spread southward out of Mesopotamia into what we would call kind of the Middle East, the lower Middle East. They spread a little bit along the northern shorelines of the Mediterranean, but basically they followed the Mediterranean circuit southward into Africa and the Arabian Peninsula, and this is where they put down their roots. And so if you know people whose ethnicity hails from Africa or from the lower Middle East, chances are they are Hamites. They have Hamite background to them. That leaves only the third group, which we had just kind of started on before we closed up last time. That would be the Shemites. And yes, the term Semite comes from that word. And when we talk about anti-Semitism, we're focusing down about bad attitude and treatment toward Israelis specifically, but they are actually Semites. They're not the only Semites, but they are the Semites that have a tendency to be targeted in a nasty way more often than not. And the story of Genesis up to this point has been the story of everybody, up through the flood and up to this Table of Nations. From here forward, the story is going to be much more about the Semite line that brings about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, because that's the line of the promise. That's going to be the line of God dealing with mankind to bring about salvation. And so everything from here on out in the book of Genesis is basically helping Israeli people, because they're the first ones reading this book, written by Moses, given to the Israelis after they've left Egypt after 430 years there, and they're heading for the promised land, and they need to be reconnected with a true history of the origins of all the people groups, but their people group in particular, because God is calling them His people. So verse 21 of Genesis 10 says, to Shem also, the father of all the children of Eber, and that's where we get our word Hebrew, because it was in the time of Eber that the Tower of Babel incident happens, and the Hebrew language gets started. The elder brother of Japheth, so we know that Shem is older than Japheth, children were born. The sons of Shem, Elam, which is actually part of Mesopotamia. The Elamites come from there. Ashur, which is an area in upper Mesopotamia, which eventually Nimrod comes into and kind of takes over that region for himself and makes them do things his way, effectively. Arpakshad, Lud, and Aram. Aram is the ancient name for Syria, which is now starting to be lower down in the Middle East. As we're watching, the Shemites, whose origins start in Mesopotamia, but push southward toward the Promised Land. The sons of Aram, Uz, which is where the story of Job takes place, and that's probably because he's from this people group here of Aram. Uz, Hul, Gether, and Mash. That region, according to Josephus, these people groups settled down in the region near Damascus, so the upper Arabian Peninsula area. Arpakshad fathered Shelah, and Shelah fathered Eber. And so Eber has two sons. One is named Peleg, which is the Hebrew word for divided or division. And we are told by the Holy Spirit through the prophet Moses, in his days, the earth was divided. And I believe that means that's when the Tower of Babel incident takes place, is during the time of Eber. And the first thing that he does after the Tower of Babel is he names his next son Peleg, division, meaning we've all been divided up. And so that's why I believe that the Tower of Babel incident happens during the adult portion of the Eber generation of the Shemites. His brother's name was Joktan. Joktan fathered Almadad, Shelef, Hazarmavet, Yera, Hadaram, Uzal, Dikla, Obel, Abimiel, Sheba, Ophir, Havilah, Jobab. All these were the sons of Joktan. And so Josephus and others have tried to pin down all these names to very specific people groups. Just to shortcut it for our purposes here, basically the names of these people groups seem to be associated with the lower Middle East, north of Canaan, and heading eastward toward what will eventually become India. And so the Shemites are in this swath of existence across the lower Middle East. Their territory in which they lived extended from Mesha in the direction of Separ to the hill country of the east. These are the sons of Shem by their clans, their languages, their lands, their clans, their languages, their lands, and their nations. And then the wrap up to the whole table of nations. These are the clans of the sons of Noah according to their genealogies in their nations, and from these the nations spread abroad on the earth after the flood. Now, where did all the other people groups come from that we know existed in the ancient world? like the people living in North America and South America, Australia. Well, they would have migrated from these particular people groups to where they eventually settled themselves. And some of their physical characteristics might help you see where they originally came from. It seems as if, in some of the secular stories, that the people in North and South America got there by coming up and over the Bering Strait, probably during some of this this turmoil of the climate that was happening after the time of the flood, probably just right after the Tower of Babel incident. And so more than likely, they're related to people groups already heading that direction. So we know that the Japhethites were heading northward. Perhaps some of them also headed northeast. But we're also aware that the Hamites were in the Mesopotamia region, and they also spread a little bit toward the east. So maybe they contributed some of the genetic material going that direction. And honestly, even the Shemites were spreading toward the east, out toward what is now India. And so they could have contributed some of the genetic makeup of these groups that came across Eastern Asia, and then into North America, and from there southward. We do know, though, that the people groups in North and South America do share a lot of interesting traits with people in the far east of Asia. We're aware that people in Australia and the subcontinent of India share some of the characteristics with people living in the Africa continent. And we know the Africa continent was peopled by the Hamites. And so it's likely that some of their people headed in the direction of the southeast, heading toward India and down into Australia to the Pacific Islands, and then maybe even from there contributed some of the genetic material that came to South America as well. And so we can't be exactly precise into how all of these different additional groups came into existence, but everybody can be traced back to the three families that started repopulating the world after the flood was over. Now, why did they spread out, and how in the world did they end up with different languages? Well, that's the story in chapter 11. Let's go ahead and look at it. Now, the whole earth had one language and the same words. There is a little bit of historical indication that the Sumerians had a singular language, a language that is not connected with any of the other languages around it. And so it could be that the Sumerian language may represent the language of the people coming off of the ark and starting World 2.0. Some people have thought that Hebrew was the language of the perfect creation, but I think there's a better indication that Hebrew came into existence at the time of Eber, which means as part of the Tower of Babel incident. So what precipitated the Tower of Babel? Verse 2, as people migrated from the east. Now, the east that's being talked about here is probably northeast of Babylonia, where the landing site of the ark was on the mountains of Ararat. Now, we have one great big mountain that's called the Mount of Ararat, and some people have claimed to have spotted a great big box up there. And so that's possible that that's where it was at, but where did they come from, the Ark to? Josephus makes a big deal that there was a place called the Place of First Descent. And the place that he describes gets claimed to either be a few days' travel southeast of Mount Ararat, or others claim that the thing that Josephus was describing is a week or more travel to the south-southwest of the Mountain of Ararat. And I cannot pin down which of those two it is. But in both of those positions, you could refer to that as the east, because Mesopotamia in ancient times was referred to as the east. But that is where they started from and began to migrate, looking for a better place to settle than just the first place they came to. And what did they find? It says they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. Now, Shinar is also the same place where the Sumerians were. And so this all seems to be tied together, that this is the origin point of the initial post-flood civilization, and that this initial post-flood civilization had one language. And they intentionally selected this spot between the two rivers, between the Tigris and the Euphrates, because it was a good flat area with lots of opportunity for agriculture. And we know that that is one of the things that helps Mesopotamian culture blossom, is because agriculture was so much easier to do there, with the water supply being quite prevalent than other places. However, verse number 3 is probably tied into the Nimrod story we've already talked about. Remember, Nimrod was a mighty man before he who is. He was a mighty hunter. Now, that sounds just at first statement as if that's a positive thing, but I'm going to suggest to you that it's probably a negative thing, that he was actually a self-centered, tyrannical person. The Jewish traditions that are recorded in Josephus seems to indicate that he believed that it would be weak and inappropriate to knuckle under to a god who drowned out the civilization before the flood, that he was not willing to let mankind do what mankind wanted to do. And so, according to this tradition, Nimrod is the one that said, "Everybody, let me be your leader, and I'll show you how we deal with supreme beings that try to tell us what to do." And the idea was that he wanted to build a waterproof tower that would protect them from any future attempt to drown them out, which tells me that he wasn't believing God's promise that he would never allow a universal flood to drown out mankind again. But also a tower that would be heading up into the sky itself, up into the heavenly region where God was, perhaps even an assault on heaven itself. And so that's attributed to Nimrod as the chief troublemaker for that, the first grand tyrant. And he was the first of the Gibberim, the mighty ones. And that word is sometimes used in association with the offspring of the genetic manipulation of humanity by the fallen angels. And remember that that happened, according to Genesis 6, before the flood and after the flood. And so Nimrod may actually be one of the first new experiments of trying to control humanity by the fallen angels. Verse number 3. So they said to one another, and this is Nimrod who's leading this apparently, "Come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly." There's not a ton of natural stone in Babylonia, in the central portion of Mesopotamia, but there's an awful lot of clay. So they took the clay and mixed it with the straw, probably from the agricultural processes. And once they made these clay bricks, these reinforced clay bricks, they baked them thoroughly. They really made them nice and solid, like a stone substitute. And they had brick for stone and bitumen for mortar. Now, the last time we saw bitumen mentioned, it was to waterproof the ark inside and out. That seems, according to the stories of Judaism, to be what Nimrod and the others had in mind. We will build this monstrous clay brick tower. We will waterproof it, and we will have a place that we can retreat to if this God tries to drown us out again. And we will keep building this tower up until we are in his territory. That's the next verse. Then they said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves." Basically, let us make ourselves in charge of ourselves to be famous, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth. Now, that's where the problem is. God had given them the directive that now the flood is over with, you three families, Shem, Ham, Japheth, you start having babies. Raise those babies up. Let those babies get married to other babies that have grown up. Have another generation after that and another generation after that, and start spreading out and start repopulating the planet. God wanted them to spread out, not to consolidate in one spot. But apparently, Nimrod felt that there was strength in numbers. And another one of the things that he basically told them is, we need to stay together in one place. We will build this massive city with this massive tower, and we will be the masters of our own fate from here on out. God is not going to tell us what to do. And that is probably what precipitated God's response. Verse 5, "And he who is came down to see the city and the tower which the children of man had built." Now, he didn't have to come down. He's omniscient. He knows everything. But this is the wording that is often used for visitation, which means evaluation, which means that something's going to happen one way or the other. Verse 6, "He who is said, behold, they are one people, and they have all one language, and this is only the beginning of what they will do." Again, omniscience, God knows the future. And he knows that if he does not do something at this juncture, it's going to get even worse real fast. So God, from time to time, intervenes in a very cataclysmic manner to stop mankind from getting too sinful too quickly, because God has a plan that he's working out of salvation. So God says, nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and there confuse their language so that they may not understand one another's speech. Again, when when God says, let us, I am of the opinion that it is Father, Son, Holy Spirit having a conference, that this is a Godhead discussion. I know that there are other people out there, some of them very knowledgeable, that say this is God speaking to his divine counsel, that is, to his angelic host, saying that this needs to be done. But you'll remember my objection the last time to that was it was about creation, and we know angels are not made in the image and likeness of God. Only people are. And so I don't think he would have been speaking to the angels in that way. So I believe this is God, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, deciding this is one of the times that intervention is necessary. Verse 8, so he who is dispersed them from there over the face of all the earth, and they left off building the city. Seems to be an instantaneous effect where God simply gives each of the people groups that we were kind of mentioning earlier in chapter 10 a new language. And it disrupts communication, which disrupts the cooperation, which disrupts participation in the building project and in trying to stick with each other. And basically God says, I mean it, spread out. And that is more than likely where all three of the base groups start spreading away from Mesopotamia. Now, some of them stick closer, some of the smaller groups stick closer, and we'll talk about them. Verse number 9, therefore, its name was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth, and from there the Lord dispersed them over the face of all the earth. The Hebrew word Babel means confusion. The Sumerian word Babel has to do with the gate of God. And so that may have been part of the original intent, is to break into heaven. But God says, nope, you're not breaking into heaven. You're losing your languages.